Part 6. Conclusion. Chapter 26. Lifelong Learning. What separates some of the best software engineers out there from the rest? One thing is that the great ones never stop learning. As well as picking up new languages and technologies, they dive into new, interesting approaches. Take Simon Willison, co-creator of the Web Django framework, former director of architecture at Eventbrite, and an independent software engineer at the time of this book's publication. Simon has been coding for more than 20 years and is a very productive engineer who has not stopped learning new approaches. A few months after the general release of ChatGPT, Simon documented his experiments with the large language model and what he'd learned about its applicability in helping him become a better developer. Not only this, he became an expert in exploring prompt injections into LLMs in only months. For me, Simon is a great example of a software engineer who never stops learning. He shows that there's always something new and interesting to understand and use. Learning helps in any part of your career, whether you're just starting out or are a veteran software engineer. There are approaches for this, and in this chapter we cover 1. Stay curious. 2. Keep learning. 3. Challenge yourself. 4. Keep up with the industry. 5. Give yourself a break. 1. Stay curious. No matter how much you know about tech and software engineering, there's always more to discover. One sure way to experience this is by asking questions. Ask questions. Always understand why you are working on something and how things work. Ask why and how until you get answers. And don't be afraid to go down the rabbit hole to seek these out. Here are some examples of questions you can and should ask as part of your work. Why are we doing this project? Who benefits? As a software engineer, your job is not to complete tickets and write code. It's to create value for your team and the business. So start by understanding why your work matters, who benefits from it, and how. For example, as you begin work on a ticket that says, make the padding on the submit 4 pixels wider, ask why this is being done. It could be that the app has accessibility issues and older users have issues navigating it. In that case, increasing padding might be one solution, but is it the most practical? Is it only the submit button that has this issue or all buttons? Could you solve a whole category of accessibility issues across the app with a smarter approach? Why does it work now? What changed? Sometimes when trying to resolve a bug, an issue simply fixes itself. This is good news, right? You can get back to work and close the issue as works for me, cannot reproduce, or probably already fixed. Well, a questioning mentality doesn't leave it there. After all, you don't understand what really happened. Perhaps the issue is still present, but only affects certain users, certain configurations, or certain regions. Perhaps another unrelated code change fixed this issue. Perhaps it's an indeterministic issue. Put your detective hat on and investigate what really happened. There is no such thing as a bug that fixes itself. There's always a reason why it happens. If you ask questions and investigate, you'll find out what really happened and become a better software engineer in the process. This is because you learn something valuable about tracking down these issues, how computer systems work, and edge cases you were unaware of. Which alternatives could we use? Early in my career, working at a software consultancy, I was put on a project to build a simple enough CRUD, create, update, delete, business application to manage business records for a customer. A senior software engineer advising the project said I should use the in-house object relational mapping tool, ORM, to store and retrieve data for this application. I was unsure why I should do this, but didn't ask and assumed the senior engineer knew best. I built the application using this wrapper. However, when it was time to hand over the project, I noticed something worrying. The application became very slow as soon as it had more than 50 records. Inserting or updating a record took 5 seconds, then 10, and then even longer. The issue was the custom ORM tool was terrible at dealing with even small data sets. I asked the senior engineer which alternatives we could use and what those alternatives would mean. As we discussed options, it became apparent that throwing away the ORM tool or using a mature ORM tool with no known performance issues would be more sensible. I ended up rewriting the application to use a popular open-source ORM tool at the data layer. I would have saved so much time if I'd only questioned the initial approach and evaluated alternatives. Other questions worth asking. How does this solution work exactly? Dig deep and don't stop until you understand the exact details. What does this component do under the hood? In modern software engineering, it's very common for a library or framework to do the heavy lifting of building an application. However, if you don't understand how the tool, library, or framework works under the hood, then you're doing yourself a disservice and turning down a learning opportunity. What would it mean if we built our own solution from scratch? When building a project, you have the option to use existing components, vendors, or to build your own. I believe it's sensible to ask what it would mean to build your own solution, not because you necessarily want to, but because doing so might reveal what the components or vendors need to do. Stay curious and be humble. People I observed to be lifelong learners share the traits of being humble and approachable, even when they're senior. They have an appetite for learning and are flexible in changing their opinions when they discover new facts and information. An example of this is Kent Beck, creator of Extreme Programming and a major advocate of test-driven development, TDD. He joined Facebook in 2011, aged 50, and thought he'd seen it all in tech. Here's his impression of the company after he finished bootcamp, from an interview with Software Engineering Daily. "I see this place, it's crazy. It looks like a clown show, and yet things are working really well. They weren't doing the things in my books. In the back of my mind, there is the mystery of this bumblebee. In theory, this process should be a disaster. In practice, it's working extremely well at doing two things at the same time, scaling and exploration." After he joined, Kent hosted a class on test-driven development as part of a hackathon. Colleagues were not using TDD, so he expected they'd show up to learn about it. Nobody came to Kent's class on TDD. Meanwhile, the Argentinian tango dance class was oversubscribed with a waitlist. Kent was accomplished and respected across the industry, and TDD was a widely accepted best practice for software. But Facebook didn't use it. A different kind of software engineer could have tried to force TDD on the company or have left for another place. Kent Beck did neither. He took the humble, curious approach and set about understanding how Facebook operated one of the world's largest sites without TDD. This approach led him to appreciate how Facebook prioritized moving fast while relying on advanced experimentation and rollback systems, and how, in the case of Facebook, moving fast without tests was possible. Kent Beck went on to have a fulfilling career at Facebook, being respected in the workplace and mentoring hundreds of engineers. None of this would have happened if he was not humble and curious. 2. Keep learning. Pairing and shadowing. Working together with another engineer to solve a problem by pair programming or pairing to sketch out a solution is a superior way to solve a problem and learn from a colleague. Pair programming is a practice that a minority of experienced software engineers swear by because they see how much more efficient it is. However, most engineers don't do it, while many have never tried it. When you are stuck in a problem, consider asking a teammate to pair with you to solve it together. That's all there is to pairing. Once you're experienced in pairing sessions, you can proactively offer to pair with engineers whom you notice are stuck. Shadowing involves experiencing an activity, meeting, or event which you otherwise would not. For example, there are plenty of meetings at work to which you don't get invited. But if you're curious, you may think you could learn something from attending one. So ask a person who is invited if you can shadow them by going along. Just remember, shadowing means observing and not having input. Situations that lend themselves to shadowing. A job interview. If you're inexperienced at interviewing, ask to shadow an interview to observe how it's conducted. A meeting in which software engineers don't have direct input, like a strategy meeting for product managers or an incident review for directors at which a teammate is attending. Another team's regular event. For example, joining another team's weekly update meeting as a tech lead to observe how it's run and what the dynamics are. When you hear of an interesting meeting or event you're not invited to, but which you think is a learning opportunity, ask the organizer if you can shadow it. The worst they can say is no. Mentorship. Having a mentor to learn from and mentoring others are great ways to keep learning and growing. Mentorship is a two-way relationship, wherein mentors learn from mentees while they give them the benefits of their experience. We go into detail on mentoring in Part 3, Chapter 12, Collaboration and Teamwork. Self-guided learning. Learning by yourself is an essential skill in tech, which empowers you to be more autonomous and to unblock yourself when you don't know something by just learning it. Within software engineering, there's no shortage of resources online for learning languages, frameworks, and approaches, including reference documentation for languages, frameworks, and libraries. These resources are usually pretty dry, but are typically the most up-to-date. Educational resources like articles, books, videos, and courses. There's an ever-growing quantity of these, both free and paid for. The more niche the field, the more likely it is that paid resources are most helpful. These resources tend to pay for themselves in their educational value. Also, your employer might have a learning and development budget, meaning you don't have to spend your own money. Forums and QA sites, where you can ask for support and help like Stack Overflow, Reddit, Discord servers, and other programming communities. Artificial intelligence tools. Large language models, LLMs, can be helpful tools that can offer pointers to understand and explain programming context. But don't forget, these tools sometimes make things up, so don't blindly trust them. Learning by doing. I've left the most efficient approach until last. Build something using the technology or approach you want to learn. For example, if you want to learn a new language like Go, build a service or rewrite an existing one in this language. Nothing beats firsthand experience of typing code and debugging issues. The other resources in this list can help with this. As you become more experienced in a field, your learning process changes. As a beginner, in a field such as the programming language TypeScript, guidance is very helpful. This may come from opinionated resources or from an experienced engineer who acts as a guide. At the intermediate level, it's more useful to explore an area yourself and seek out expert resources. For example, if you have experience with TypeScript, you could try out its more advanced features like union types, the key of keyword, and required and partial utility types. It's useful to consult advanced resources that go into detail on how advanced language features work and are implemented under the hood. When you are an expert in a field, teaching others and pushing boundaries are ways to grow. Taking TypeScript as an example, teaching engineers how the language works and creating for them written or recorded resources are good ways to deepen your own understanding of it. Taking on advanced projects like writing a compiler for TypeScript is a challenge that would push both your understanding of the language and your understanding of how compilers work. Getting involved in widely used projects written in the language is another way of doing so. Share what you learn. A great way to learn something in depth is to teach it, because this requires you to understand how it works, break it down into simple enough terms, and answer questions, including ones that didn't occur to you. Speaking personally, my own understanding of concepts, frameworks, or systems deepens when I explain them, and I frequently discovered gaps in my own knowledge from doing so, meaning I needed to understand them better. Of course, up-leveling other people is the main benefit of teaching. It's a bonus that doing this also makes you more of an expert in the subject. Here's a useful life hack. If you really want to force yourself to learn something well, give a presentation or hold a session about it. I did this at Uber when I wanted to understand how its dozens of systems worked together, which about 10 teams owned. So I volunteered to put together an onboarding presentation for new joiners about what each system did and how they worked together. For this, I needed to piece together the parts and get a deep understanding of each part of the system. Hoard knowledge. Simon Willison has an interesting observation about the value of hoarding knowledge. He told me, "I think a big part of succeeding in tech is just constantly hoarding new things that you know how to do, then looking out for opportunities to combine and apply them." This is why it's useful to dip your toes into areas which aren't closely related to your main expertise. For example, if you're a front-end engineer, dig into a different platform like back-end or embedded. Play around with new technologies like large language models or machine learning. Learn about a different area and hoard this knowledge. It might not be useful right now, but could come in handy later. How you learn changes over time. Approaches to learning are more effective or less effective depending on whether you're a newcomer to the industry or are an expert in areas. No single approach is right for everyone, but here are a few things I've observed. Guided learning, where someone pairs with you or you follow tutorials, is often more efficient when starting out in a new area. When you have a deep interest in an area, self-guided learning often works well. Needing to solve a problem can be a very strong motivation, which pushes you to use the most efficient ways to figure out how a given technology works or doesn't work. I've had times when I preferred different mediums for learning new things. I've gone from using books to learn a new language and/or technology, to video tutorials, to using reference documentation, to going back to books, and now using AI tools. I suspect my preferences will continue to change over time. And it's not just your own preferences that change. Team dynamics can have a large influence on learning from colleagues' knowledge. If they are open to helping you and have relevant experience in areas you need to make progress in, you can often learn faster this way. Embrace the fact that your preferences and approaches to learning change over time, and don't shy away from trying out new approaches. 3. Keep challenging yourself. There is a learning curve when discovering and understanding how something new works, like a technology or system, or how to navigate a new team or workplace. At first, the curve is steep, as you take on and organize a lot of new information. Over time, this curve flattens as you become an expert. You can view an illustration of this curve at engguidebook.com/audiobook. There are 3 distinct learning phases. As an example, let's take the case of learning to use a new framework. 1. Onboarding/beginner. You're just getting started with the framework and reading the code or making simple changes using it. Initially, you have trouble with the basics, but you quickly cross this hurdle. Quickly compared to phases 2 and 3 at least. 2. Proficient. You know the basics, and as you use and learn about the framework, start to discover and use more advanced features. At first, your progress is equally rapid as before, but this slows over time. You look under the hood of the framework, debug challenging bugs, and over time reach a point where few things surprise you. 3. Expert. After working with the framework for a long time, you become an expert. There's not much left to learn. Well, this would be true if the framework never changes, but it does. When a new version of the framework comes out, your level drops back to proficient. Once you reach expert level, the learning curve tapers off. Sooner or later, you get to this stage with any technology or team you work on or company you work at. The only places where you can never really feel like an expert are fast-changing environments, like the forefront of a rapidly changing industry, or at a startup experiencing hypergrowth. Still, most engineers do reach the expert phase, and when you do, you feel it. So, what next? There are options. Do nothing. Stay the expert you are and enjoy being a go-to person for the technology. Keep up with the occasional change like new versions and gain an expert understanding of these. Teach more. Remain the expert you are and help others to level up. By teaching, you continue your own learning. Engage with the industry. If you're a renowned expert in an area within your company, you could probably learn more outside the company. Engaging with industry-leading figures and events and publishing your learnings are ways to do this. Of course, you might need some support from your manager and employer to pursue these. However, doing so could establish both yourself and your company as industry-wide known figures in a given technology. Challenge yourself with new technology. For example, if you're an expert in building back-end services in Go, consider onboarding to new languages or using new frameworks. Challenge yourself in a new area or platform. A bolder move is to change not just the technology, but your area or platform. For example, if you feel you are an expert back-end engineer, you could explore working on the front end, get deeper into machine learning and AI, or another area you're a beginner in. There is no right or wrong approach to what to do next when you're an expert. I suggest that if you are an expert, it's beneficial to decide what you want to do instead of just going with the flow. Are you content with staying as the expert? Do you want to teach more? Or is it time for a new challenge and to feel the thrill of learning something new? 4. Keep up with the industry. The one constant in technology is change. Technologies change, new languages and frameworks come out, and existing ones are improved. Likewise for approaches and platforms. Sometimes change happens over years, other times in a matter of months. An example of a change that took months to spread is large language models. ChatGPT launched publicly in November 2022, and only 3 months later had 100 million monthly active users, including many software engineers using it to write code more efficiently. There are ways to keep pace with change. Through work. One reason to work at modern companies that use cutting-edge technology is that you keep up to date just by showing up at work. If your team uses the latest version of a modern language and the latest stable versions of popular frameworks, then you keep yourself up to date via your job. This is one reason that companies with modern tech stacks are attractive to developers. Keep up with tech news. Read newsletters and websites, listen to podcasts, and watch videos that summarize the latest news in tech and your segment. For example, if you're a back-end engineer using Go and Rust at work, find resources on these niches. There's no shortage of publications for keeping engineers up to date. You can also use aggregators like Feedly to subscribe to several websites that cover interesting topics and read relevant articles every now and then. Build side projects. Side projects done in your personal time and prototyping at work are two of the surest ways to avoid being left behind. If you don't have the opportunity to do these at work, consider spending time outside of work on building proof-of-concept projects. Try out new frameworks, languages, platforms, and approaches. Tinker with tech, even at work. Find excuses to try out a new technology or interesting approach, even if it's not strictly related to your day-to-day work. You could prototype a simple tool for your own use or your team's with a framework you've always wanted to try. Or you could play around with a piece of technology and then do a lunch and learn session with your team, sharing what you've learned. 5. Give yourself a break. The advice contained in this chapter may give the impression that it's necessary to be learning for every waking minute of your life. This could not be further from the truth. It's great to learn something new regularly, but there will naturally be times when this doesn't happen in the course of your work, or you lack the willpower or opportunity. You need to give yourself a break, just like athletes don't train every day or train at full intensity each time. Obviously, the tech industry moves fast, so it's understandable to feel FOMO, fear of missing out, if you don't keep up with things. However, my view is that to always keep learning in order to not fall behind risks burnout. Sometimes you just need to give yourself a break from it all. Don't feel guilty about doing so.